Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Looking around the AFC South this week, and today we look at the Indianapolis Colts. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Bob Kravitz from The Athletic. Bob, what's going on? How are we doing?
I'm good, gentlemen. How are you?
We're great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So, Bob, what have you made of Matt Ryan thus far during Colts training camp in terms of what he's brought to the team on the field, but also in the locker room as well? What have you made of the Matt Ryan experience thus far in Indianapolis?
Well, it's a lot less crazy than it was with Carson Wentz. The Carson Wentz experience was took a couple of years off my life. but this guy has got the right stuff from an intangible standpoint. I mean, he's a leader. He's, he knows how to handle himself. Is he a major upgrade on Carson Wentz? I think he's going to be an upgrade. How significant of an upgrade, I don't know. People forget that as bad as Carson was at times last year, he still had 27 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. So he wasn't, grotesquely bad. But at the end of the year, he obviously fell apart for a number of reasons. I think it's an upgrade, but they're still gonna rely a lot on Jonathan Taylor, I think, as the season goes on.
Yeah, Bob, and I look at these two teams. First of all, I just think it just shapes up to be a really interesting and close race for the AFC South. Yeah. And I look at the quarterbacks. And I think similar quarterbacks with, I think most would agree that the Colts have a better offensive line, but that was problematic last season. And then, of course, now that you have, they both have great running backs, but you have questions at receiver. The Colts have had those. The Titans have them now. How do you feel about those two groups this year compared with last year? The offensive line, the protection for Matt Ryan, and then the receiving group.
Yeah, there's a lot of concern here because you've got Matt Pryor playing left tackle for the first. He's going to be starting, and he's never been a starting left tackle at the NFL level. So you got a question there. Danny Pinter is playing right guard. He's probably better off as a center, which is why I think that, at some point they might even think about moving Ryan Kelly. Just because they got to pay a lot of people coming up here. As far as the wide receivers, I think this is an unholy mess. They keep trying to convince everybody that they've done enough with their wide receivers and their tight ends. I don't believe they have. They're relying on Pittman. Pittman they can rely on, but they're relying on Paris Campbell, who's been hurt the last 3 years, and they're relying on Alec Pierce, a rookie out of Cincinnati, to be their numbers two and three wide receivers. And I think that's really risking it. They just don't have top end talent at wide receiver, and they don't have any depth. So other than that, they're just fine.
Exactly. Bob Kravitz, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. So Bob, on the defensive side of the ball, what can Stephon Gilmore bring to this group in your mind? What do you think he still has left in the tank?
I think he's got plenty. He's been great at training camp. And, with young guys who, are training camp all-stars, I just kind of ignore them because when the lights go on, it's a whole different player. But with Gilmore, this is a guy who, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, was Defensive Player of the Year. He had some health problems. He's completely healthy now for the first time in 2-3 years, and he has looked spectacular, here in training camp. And it's been interesting to watch him go up against Alec Pierce every day. It's been a great learning experience for Alec Pierce, but I think they're in really good shape with Gilmore.
So how much of a difference does that make? They were a good defense last year, but obviously they had some injuries, some issues. Like, do you think, Bob, that this could be a top five type of defense for the Colts this year?
I think they could be top 10, top seven, maybe. You still have questions about the pass rush. They hope, they believe they addressed that with Yannick Ngakoue, who's had 8 sacks, I think 6 years in a row, something like that. They expect more from Kwity Paye in his second year in the league. He showed some signs. Dayo Odegbo is another guy they're expecting a lot from. He's a second-year guy. But, the big problem is going to be Leonard. Shaquille Leonard, you don't know when he's going to be back. When he does come back, how long will it take him to get to round back into football shape? So I think they're going to need him, obviously, especially early in the season when 5 of the first 7 games are against AFC South opponents.
Bob, Jim Irsay's been, he's made it pretty obvious that, catching the Titans is something that's a huge priority for this team and this franchise. I'm just curious, to that end, how are Frank Reich and Chris Ballard viewed currently with this Colts fan base, and how do you think Jim Irsay views that combo heading into this year with Matt Ryan at quarterback?
Well, I think that Irsay is pretty pleased with where this team is. When you go through, 6 quarterbacks in 6 years, you're not going to get much in the way of consistency. So they've done a pretty good job of sort of piecing it together. I think if you ask the fans, I think the clock starts ticking at the end of this year. If they really struggle, if they don't win the AFC South, or if heaven forbid they don't make the playoffs again with Matt Ryan, I think that's going to change the dynamic completely for Frank Reich and Chris Ballard. So this is a very, very important year for those guys. But I do think that Jim Irsay is pretty, he extended both guys, and I think he's pretty bullish on what he's got in his front office and his coaching staff.
Talking to the great Bob Kravitz, my colleague at The Athletic. So on that same idea, Bob, do you separate those two? Because I look at it maybe a little bit. I'm a little bit more leery of Reich, and I do think that Ballard overall, I think he's done a good job. But, I guess I feel like Reich was kind of a darling of NFL media not too long ago. And I don't know. I have some questions about him as an in-game coach, but am I overreacting to last season?
Well, last year was obviously a strange year, second year of the pandemic. When you have Carson Wentz, you're just holding on for dear life. I mean, I can't explain to you what the Carson Wentz experience is like. There are moments when he was spectacular, and there are moments, as you would well remember, when he was throwing left-handed interceptions out of his own end zone. So it was just nuts. But, yeah, I think Frank Reich he's been pretty good. He's done a couple of things on fourth down that I took issue with, 4th and 4 late in the game in his own end zone, against Houston, made no sense. There was a difference between playing a home game in the playoffs and playing in Houston in the first round. They went to Houston and won that game. That remains the only playoff game that they've won since Ballard and Reich have been here. So, I think this year is kind of a make-or-break year. I don't think anybody's going to get fired if they fare poorly, but I do think the clock starts ticking at the end of the season if they come up short.
Bob, last thing for you here. Jonathan Taylor last year with, over 1,800 yards, over 2,000 yards from scrimmage last year. At his age, do you think there's an even higher level that he can get to heading into this year?
I think there's a higher level, but I don't think we're going to see it, and here's why. They lost so much faith in Carson last year. If you look at the numbers, Taylor was routinely around 15, 18 carries the first 8, 9, 10 games of the season. As the season wore on and as Carson started to fall to pieces, he was running the ball 25, 30 times. I mean, he was like Derrick Henry. And I think they want desperately for him to get lesser numbers. They want to be less reliant on Jonathan Taylor this year than they were last year. So, yes, I do think there is a higher level for him to go. But in terms of raw numbers, I don't know that it's going to happen. I think they're going to rely a lot on Nyheim Hines, coming out of the backfield in the slot. I think they want to do a lot of other things besides run the ball down people's throats.
Bob Kravitz from The Athletic, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Bob, great stuff. Really appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
My pleasure, gents. Take care of yourself.
Absolutely, you as well. Bob Kravitz, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025, including something very interesting he just said there about the Colts that I find a little bit surprising. We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Your favorite game, Silly Underdog Picks, is back. Sign up today at thegamenashville.com or the 102.5 The Game app. The Game Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Thanks to Bob Kravitz for joining us in the last segment. So I think the Jonathan Taylor conversation is interesting from the standpoint of, you know, he came on so strong at the end of last year. He finishes with 332 carries, 1,811 yards, and he's 23 years old. I mean, he's a 23-year-old guy heading into this year. You would think that workload at this point of his career, probably not much of a concern given his age, and, you know, he's only been in the league for 2 years at this point. But Bob Kravitz making it sound like they'd probably like to rely a little bit less on Jonathan Taylor heading into this year. And obviously they feel like they can do that now with Matt Ryan as the quarterback. Apparently Carson Wentz was just an unmitigated disaster up there in Indy.
Yeah, an unmitigated disaster who, again, 27-7, like Bob pointed out, and also won them some games. But he certainly lost them some games, no doubt about that. And then all the off-the-field stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff in that segment with Bob on the Colts. I'm getting blown up by Jared, who again thinks everybody in Indy media is a huge Colts homer. I did not sense the huge Colts homerism there from Bob Kravitz. It seemed pretty, pretty pragmatic, and a lot of interesting stuff. The Taylor stuff, you know, someone had a question on Fantasy Football on the text line about they were about to draft Taylor. Now maybe they'll go Henry. I will say, also on that front, Frank Reich actually said at some point during camp, if I was doing fantasy football, I would draft Nyheim Hines this year. And to Bob's point,
number one overall? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm not saying that.
If you want to do that in our Robbie and Rex Road Fantasy Football League, by all means.
Alex, our newest member, our fifth person on the roster, if you get the number one pick, don't ignore Nyheim Hines. Yeah. Just saying. But no, but I was a bit surprised to hear that, and it's an interesting thought in terms of Jonathan Taylor's usage. Also, not a pretty picture painted there of the receiving situation. You know, the offensive line's still a question. Their best defensive player, although maybe he's not their best defensive player now because they have Gilmore, but Shaq Leonard.
That's going to take me a minute to get used to.
Yeah, me too. But the back, I mean, that's, you never like to hear that. So it's there's a lot of questions, you know, for that team. It still starts to me with really how much better are they at quarterback?
Well, and then there was an injury yesterday to the Colts as well with Rigoberto Sanchez, you know, with an Achilles injury. He's going to be out for the Colts at punter. So we already had a couple people in the text line today be like, you know, if it's Curran winning the job and you know you're cutting Stonehouse. Or if it's the other way around, like maybe the Colts end up with the punter that the Titans don't want with Sanchez going down with the Achilles injury.
Colts are sitting there with Dennis Kelly and Brett Kern just cackling at the Titans' expense and then go win the AFC South.
Yeah.
What a nightmare for Titans fans. No, it's a good thought. Honestly, with their situation, I think there's a lot of teams in this league without knowing the exact punting situation of every single NFL team, which is a fail on my part, by the way. I should be held accountable for that.
Yeah.
I think there's quite a few teams out there who would be happy to pick up a Kern or a Stonehouse on cut day.
So we asked this question in the offseason after A.J. Brown was traded and before, you know, training camp started with information that we didn't know then that we know now. So I'll throw it back at you. Which skill group are you taking? Are you taking the Colts skill group or are you taking the Titans skill group offensively? And I'm including Taylor and Henry in that, but I'm also mainly focused on the pass catchers.
Oh, man. Well, and you've got, I mean, Hines has to be considered sure. in here.
For
he
sure.
is, he's a real nice weapon. You know, and they had the tight end hurt, which is a big loss for them, too. I'm going to take the Titans, honestly. Wait, you are counting quarterbacks, yeah?
I am.
I'm going to take the Titans, and I think I give a slight edge at quarterback, and I give a slight edge at running back. And the rest of it might be slightly to the Colts, and that's even with all their questions at receiver, because I think that Pittman is the best receiver of the bunch. I think people would agree with that, right?
I think so. I mean, a lot of that to me depends on what Robert Woods looks like when he's back. But, yeah, I think Pittman is an ascending player in the league. I don't think there's any question.
But I think Tana Henry still tilt the scales for me, narrowly.
See, I'm taking the Titans, and I'm not going to say it's not close, but I don't have much hesitation in taking the Titans. I just
– Okay.
Look, you could probably convince me either way with Matt Ryan and Tannehill, I guess, although I'd probably give the slight edge to Tannehill. I'm taking Henry at this point still over Taylor. And I like the entire composition of the Titans pass catchers more than I do Indy. Like I think the pass catchers for Indy are going to be a big problem. And Kravitz laid it out there. Everybody keeps talking about Paris Campbell down there in Indy. The guy's been hurt for 3 years in a row. Like I'm not buying into Paris Campbell doing anything for this team. I've yet to see it. So if it's not going to be him, I do feel good about Pittman. I have no clue about Alec Pierce. We'll see what happens on that front. I'm giving the edge to the Titans. I really am.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I know some people are going to laugh, but Westbrook Akine, like I feel, other than Pittman, I feel better about him than anybody else they have.
Yeah, I agree. And that to me is, like, everybody keeps talking about the Colts. And I get it. It feels like Groundhog Day. Everybody talks about the Colts every year. Their receiving room is a problem. And I understand the Titans lost A.J. Brown. And maybe we're too close to the forest here in Nashville to see the trees, and that's going to be a major problem for the Titans this year. I don't know. But right now, I don't know how it's not going to be a big problem for the Colts. I don't think there's enough there.
And then, of course, if things break the Titans' way as the season goes on, like Phillips is a good pick. Phillips is going to do some things. Now, people have been asked about Phillips on the fantasy perspective on the text line today. I'd be wary there. And asking the question of Phillips versus Burks, I think, if you forced me to make a pick late in a draft, I would go Burks. That's the thing. What if Burks does pick it up, get in there more and more and more? You know, then I think you would be right that the edge is not close.
Well, I agree, but you could make that same argument for Pierce as well down there in Indy. I keep saying down there, it's up there.
Yeah,
they're north.
My kid keeps talking about going down to college. Like, no, you went north, man. I think Burks has a lot more upside.
I agree.
Than, like, Pierce might be better from the start. I think he's going to be out there and probably play more than Burks. But I think Burks certainly could end up being a much better player than him.
Yeah, I think that absolutely could be the case. I just – this goes, it kind of ties back into the conversation we had yesterday. Like, everybody's running away picking the Colts. Lots of people picking the Colts to win the AFC South. And I just think it's way, way closer than people are making it out to be. Like, I give the edge to the Titans. I know a lot of people give the edge to the Colts. I don't necessarily fault you for picking the Colts to win the division, but I think it's literally a pick 'em. Like, I think they're going to be neck and neck all year long. So this idea that the Colts are some runaway favorite in the AFC South, I don't know what I'm looking at here with all these predictions coming out.
Yeah, they're going to be picked. It'll be overwhelming once all the predictions come out, and that's very predictable and obvious. And we've talked about some of the reasons. I think A.J. Brown and Ryan Tannehill, for people who don't closely pay attention to the Titans, I get why you're like, oh, well, they're not very good, are they? And Derrick Henry coming back from an injury, I guess. But I agree. I think if you actually follow these teams and you don't think it's going to be close, I gotta follow the reasoning.
It was just nice to hear somebody from Indianapolis say, you know, I don't know how much of an upgrade Matt Ryan's going to be on Carson Wentz. I hadn't heard much of that in camp so far.
Bob brought it. That was some really good stuff.
615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get back into the Todd Downing discussion. What would you consider to be a success for Todd Downing this year? And you know, how much could he be looking over his shoulder to Tim Kelly behind him as well? We'll get into all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is from Seafood Sensation. Seafood Sensation is a lively restaurant in the heart of Nashville that uses the best ingredients and provides a great atmosphere as well. Get a half off a $25 gift card at thegamenashville.com/deals. while supplies last. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezevic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. So, Joe, it's a big year for Todd Downing. Obviously, a lot of noise on Ryan Tannehill to end the year last year after the playoff game. Lots of noise from Titans fans on Todd Downing as well. It is an interesting dynamic heading into this year that it's tough to tell exactly how it's going to work in training camp. Once the regular season begins, I think maybe we'll get a better picture of exactly what it looks like. But now Tim Kelly is in there as the passing game coordinator and Todd Downing in year two as the OC for the Titans. As you look at this year for this group, given the fact that we know A.J. Brown's gone, we've talked at length about the concerns of the offensive line, the concerns with maybe some lack of experience in the receiving group and lack of depth. What would you consider to be a success for this offense and for Todd Downing in year two? And I guess what intrigues you the most about Downing as he enters into his second year with this team calling the plays?
Well, it's hard. It's hard with Todd Downing. I think it will be more difficult to, well, it'll probably be easy to blame him, but more difficult to figure out if it's Todd Downing having this revelation if the offense turns around and has a much better year because of Tim Kelly. I just think it's not the same thing. They want it to be considered the same thing as Jim Schwartz last year. I don't think it is, because you brought this up earlier on the show today. We've talked about it before. Tim Kelly was a person of interest for the Titans and OC search earlier, and that's not the case with Jim Schwartz. That Jim Schwartz, by my understanding, kind of fell in the lap of the Titans. You know, Tim Kelly, they went and got him, and they tried to go and at least possibly get him earlier. So, it's just, to me, I'm not saying, you know, I think we should call this like a co-OC situation, but when Tim Kelly gets brought up this year, if things go well, and I'm sure Vrabel won't love that because Vrabel just gets mad when these things get brought up. But, I mean, I think it's a lot more valid this year. Based on the title, based on the history. That said, Todd Downing's the OC. And to me, Tannehill's performance needs to be better. You still need to be able to run the ball. You need to be less predictable. I mean, look, if everyone in the press box is like, second and nine, here comes the running play to try to set up third and five, and that happens, and he actually set up third and eight, you know, then, like, they're second guessing. But if you're first guessing stuff and then, yep, there it is again, well, you should be less predictable than that.
Yeah.
So some of it is that. And I know it's very easy to nitpick the OC. It's the easiest coaching job in all sports to evaluate because we see what they call every play. But they got to run the ball. They got to have more efficiency. And, you know, they got to be not just predictable in a particular call, but like the route combinations have to be less predictable because that was a part of Tannehill's horrific game in the playoffs against Cincinnati.
I'm interested to see how different the offense looks, both from a schematic standpoint in terms of conceptually, and we've talked about this before, conceptually, you know, are there different, you know, routes, passing concepts that they maybe focus in on more than they have in the past? You've talked about, you know, some of your observations at camp seem to be that they're going deeper a little bit often and they're trying to take some shots down the field. Does that continue to happen during the regular season? And also just from, you know, formationally, do they get back to more of a two tight end look that Tannehill had a lot of success with under Arthur Smith, the play action game, big part of that? Obviously, from a personnel standpoint, I think they're probably better equipped to do that this year than they were a season ago. So if that's the case, how often do they do it? I'm really interested to see from that standpoint how different everything that I just mentioned there looks than it did last year with, you know, Julio Jones and company in there.
Yeah, I would think that they would go two tight end more, and I think that makes sense, and I think that that's been their best version in recent years. Obviously, 19 and 20, second half of 19, 20, fantastic offenses built around two tight end. I mean, last year we talked about, oh, they're going to do 11 a lot more, but and why wouldn't you with the absolutely unstoppable trio of A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, and Josh Reynolds?
Yep.
I mean, what are you supposed to – Josh Reynolds as your three? Oh, my God. Who's going to deal with this? I mean, I remember so many days.
I forgot he played for them. I'll be honest with you. I forgot he played on the team.
I know. But like when they had, first of all, they signed him. I was like, okay, that's not a bad wide receiver too, to replace Corey Davis. And then, I mean, I remember on this show being like, just think of the opportunities that guy is going to have downfield with the other two on there. It's just, what are you going to do?
Look, man,
what are you going to do?
I'll give him this. He was excited, man. I mean, that play in Seattle when he thought it was the Arena Football League out there and he just started running forward before the ball snapped, coming in motion. One of my top 10 favorite moments from the whole year last year. Shout out to Josh Reynolds.
Yeah, I mean, if he had just, you know, gone laterally, that might have been the biggest play of the year for him. Who knows? Good we man. Don't know what might have happened on that play. Anyway, it's amazing. Now you look at the personnel, and like you said, they have absolutely upgraded tight end. And I'm very interested. Chigakonko is an important part of this discussion because Austin Hooper is definitely going to be the guy. He is tight end one. Swaim's going to be out there a lot. I think they'll probably keep Hudson as a fourth. But Chigakonko, what can he realistically do this year? What difference can he make this year? I have no doubt that he can take a linebacker or safety in a matchup and make problems for them. But is he good enough at all the aspects of the job to be out there in all situations and really keep defenses guessing? If so, man, I think that's another add that's going to, along with Phillips, that's going to matter. And Burks, you know, you talk about going deep. I do think they're going to go deep more. I have to think so. Watching a camp and the draft, we talked about, remember when we thought maybe it's possible Jameson Williams, you know, could be a Titan, right? Like, they got to get that speed guy. I think they clearly think, you know, Burks is someone that they make those plays downfield, and then Racy McMath, I'm going to have to call some kind of a shot. Racy McMath will have, like, three long touchdowns this year, okay? Three touchdowns of 40 yards or more for Racy McMath.
Okay.
There's my called shot.
I like it. Three of them. It's good stuff. I like that. Joe, before we continue the conversation on Todd Downing and the offense, there is some news from Titans practice to pass along. TD putting it out there, no sign of Denico Autry, Jamarco Jones, no Nate Davis or Elijah Molden either. So four guys that we've been watching pretty closely. No Denico Autry, no Nate Davis, no Elijah Molden, and no Jamarco Jones, as the Titans are stretching out there, according to TD.
Well, the Titans have a new reserve interior offensive lineman named Dylan Radin. So the Molden, who has missed a lot of time, that situation, to the point of what we were talking about earlier, You know, the McCreary Farley Fulton starting trio gets more and more likely every day he misses. And then with the other two, you know, Nate Davis, you'd like to see him back pretty soon, but there's plenty of time. Danico Autry has missed a ton of camp, most of camp. And we know that he's a pro who knows what to do. And he was terrific last year. But I must say, that's at some point, you'd like to see him out there if you're the Titans or a Titans fan.
Dennis on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, is it possible the Titans pick up a veteran wide receiver after cuts since Burks is, quote, down hard, end quote, from Dennis?
Or down, I think it was down bad.
Down bad.
Right? Was it down bad?
Yeah, down bad.
Per the analysis of Joe Rexrod. yeah, I don't think the go get a receiver thing is really much of a thing anymore, is it? Because I think Burks is still a guy to watch here. And McMath, yeah, I think has rounded out a pretty good five for them. Again, pretty good. Not great. You don't have the big difference maker that AJ Brown was and is, but you're not going to find that guy on cut day either. So I don't think so. I think if Dennis wasn't kidding there and was just making a joke, he was actually asking the question.
I think he was kidding.
Okay. You think? I thought maybe it was a legit question, but with the joke added on. You just never know sometimes with these texts.
That is true. How do you think that the Titans offensive staff, how do they utilize Kyle Phillips as the regular season begins in your mind? Because again, there's a lot of hype about Kyle Phillips right now. A lot of love for Kyle Phillips. I think he's going to be really good in the return game. I'm excited to see that. I don't know how many snaps he's going to get. I mean, he's going to play. I don't know how many snaps he's going to get on the field for the Titans offense once the regular season begins. I'm interested to see how they'll use him in that role.
Yeah, I think –
dramatic pause from Rex Road there.
Yeah, I had to literally consider this answer. No, I think from week one, I think the first time they have third and seven, I think Kyle Phillips is out there in the slot. I do. I think that they've gotten a lot of work in with him. And again, this goes to the whole Tannehill camp thing and passing game. The main guys who are going to be catching his passes, for the most part, have been out there every single day. And he's gotten a lot of work in with Kyle Phillips. There's been some bumps along the way. It's still not perfect, but the guy just wins, and he's going to win and get open. And I just think you tap right into that from the start.
Our coverage of Titans training camp presented by Parman Energy, your one-stop petroleum solution. We'll continue the coverage and the conversation on the Titans coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Practice is underway between the Titans and the Arizona Cardinals, so going through some drills at the moment. So looking forward to seeing what comes of that today over at St. Thomas Sports Park. By the way, Joe, I guess I forgot about this and all my Kyler Murray excitement this week. You know, we're going to see some JG action, Jarrett Garantano, this week at Titans practice / the preseason game coming up this weekend as well. Little Jarrett Garantano action back in Tennessee.
I had zero idea about that. Is that right? I had no idea.
Oh, okay. He's in there.
Good for him. Good for him. Are there any reports? Again, like, I hear nothing from the Cardinals other than Reddit graphs and blobs about Kyler Murray's Call of Duty habits. Any word on Garantano and how he's played?
He went in the last game against Baltimore, which, well, of course, we know Baltimore won the game 22 in a row for the preseason. But Jarrett Garantano, 3 of 6 for 37 yards and a touchdown in that game against Baltimore. So 3 of 6. Trace McSorley got the majority of the work at quarterback for Arizona, but Garantano 3 of 6 in the last game, and in the first game 7 of 10 for 54 yards and a touchdown. So 2 touchdowns, no picks so far for Garantano this preseason.
I like it. I would imagine that he would get a fair amount of work in this final preseason game, right? So you know what? If you're a Tennessee, if you're a Vols and Titans fan, in Nashville going to the game, you know, you should cheer for Jarrett Garantano, right?
Well, I think he's probably been booed enough in this state. So, yeah, just go cheer him.
Exactly. Exactly. Show him a little support. Good for him. That's not bad. No picks. Maybe he can, you know, he's got a chance to latch on some of that. They're good for him.
How big a week is this for Logan Woodside and Malik Willis in your mind? And particularly with Woodside, I was interested to get Kuharsky's thoughts on that earlier. And it all boils down to how do Mike Vrabel and John Robinson view Logan Woodside, not how do all of us view Logan Woodside. But I still have to think that this is a pretty big week for him in terms of whatever confidence they've got in him from what they've seen the last few years is fine. But, like, at some point, you need to translate that onto the field when it matters. And I'm very, very intrigued to see if Woodside can do that this week.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I don't think there's any doubt that for us and for the public discussion of Woodside, it would help him to play well. Is that how the coaches look at it? Like, I don't know that for sure. I don't know. You know, they value the daily stuff that they see that we don't see, and the daily practice field stuff, which again for Woodside before the first preseason game was pretty good. It was way beyond what Willis was doing. It hasn't been since then. So I feel like he needs to play well, and they would like to see him play well, and it would help him. But at the same time, I mean, regardless of his performance, they could be resolved to say, you know what, he's the backup, and there's still trust and all that time put into him, and it's just the safer way to go. Or he could play great, and they could be resolved right now, like, got to get somebody else for the two. I'm not ruling that out either. There could be an intriguing name or two on Tuesday in that regard. So I guess if you're Logan Woodside, though, I would be thinking, please, let's play well. Let's not throw picks, and let's, you know, play like we've played for the most part in practice for the last few years, because it's gone kind of – it's just kind of nosedived on them here.
Coy in Clarksville on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, what do we think about D-Mace's comments that Raiders won't even make the team? It was an interesting day yesterday. I mean, Trevor Maddich came on Stillman and Company and basically just hammered Dylan Raiders and what he saw from him in the game against Tampa. And D-Mace talking yesterday about how, you know, may not even make the team, may not make the 53-man roster. I don't know if I'd go that far. Like, I look at their offensive line right now, and I don't really know what other options they've got beyond Dylan Raiders at tackle at the moment. And who knows about what the depth looks like at guard there as well. So I'm fairly confident he's going to make the team. But what his role is and how they use him the rest of the preseason, where he lines up today, I think all that is pretty interesting moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting. The text line, by the way, I disagree in general. Like, I think he's going to be on the team. But it is very interesting to see where he goes. There's a lot on the text line today, by the way, that we weren't able to get to, including some incredibly awful recipe stuff off Michelle's question. They're like, mustard on pizza. Never heard that one. But another
That's
one I
scary.
Wanted to get.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Another one I wanted to get to, Thomas and Woodbine, about the punting situation. He mentions Kern working for a year behind Craig Hendrick and then, you know, learning the knuckleballs and all that. You tell me, Robbie, I assume that means that Kern was on the practice squad and was exposed. Like, they didn't have two punters on the active roster, right?
There's no way they had two punters on the active roster. I'm trying to think back. I guess they overlapped. Honestly, I need to go back and look at that, though. I'm not sure that they overlapped.
So maybe that's just a fact there. But to answer, and I answered Thomas in the text line, like, the problem with this is that one of these guys is they're not going to keep two for the active roster. They will not, period.
You can't
period.
Do that.
Okay. So one of them will be exposed on waivers Tuesday, and I'm pretty confident either of them would be picked up. So that's why they can't approach it that way. They're not keeping two in the active roster. And both of them are attractive enough, I would think. I'm sure the Titans would love to expose Stonehouse and be able to put him on the practice squad, but there's no way they can feel good about that.
I guess they did overlap. Kern actually started with the Broncos.
Right.
So he was with the Broncos, and then he came to the Titans. So Hendrick's final year was 09, And Kern got there, I guess, in the middle of the 09 season because he started 09 with Denver. So there you go.
Yeah.
But so, no, they're not keeping great. They're not keeping two punters on the active roster.
No.
Now, I think the Colts situation is interesting. And look, the Colts are going to have to figure something out, you know, for this week before then. But whatever decision the Titans make, whether it's Kern or Stonehouse, like, I think it's going to be Kern. I'm not totally confident in that. I think it's going to be Kern. So let's say it's Kern and they expose Stonehouse. Like, I would not at all be shocked to see Stonehouse end up in Indy next week. How'd that go over?
Terrorizing the Titans with his punting for years.
Yeah, next decade. Indy may have found their punter.
I don't know, man.
But that's the decision you're making. Like, I mean, look, I think it's close. Like, I think, you know, Jared was on with, you know, Chase Wheeling D-Mace the other day, and I don't even think he wants to consider it a competition. Like, he doesn't want to mess with punter. And I get his thinking behind it. Like, the thought process is, like, you know what Kern is. You know he's not going to make any huge mistakes. And Stonehouse, although he's got a huge leg, maybe he's a little bit more susceptible to that. But I don't know. I think it could be close. Like, to me, when you're taking a look at somebody in the operation of holding the ball with your field goals,
yes,
you have to be giving it consideration. Otherwise, you're just wasting time that could otherwise be used with Kern holding the ball when he's actually going to be the one holding the field goal.
Yeah, you cannot like it as a competition. It is a competition. And it comes down to, if the Titans believe this guy is great and going to be great for a long time, that just doesn't happen every year. Speaking of Jared, I've been all these texts about Carson Wentz now. Is there a such thing as like a phone Valtrex? someone let me know.
I don't know. I mean, I was going to ask you if, like, by the time football season came around, if you were going to, you know, maybe consider unblocking Jared or whatever it is you did. Unmuting, I guess, is probably the better term. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think you're just going to leave it the way it is.
I mean, he texts me so much already. Why do I want to see his tweets, too?
I don't know. But
can you block someone on your phone?
Yeah.
You can, right?
Yeah, you can.
All right, you got to tell me how to do after if we get off the air.
But on the text line, says I say keep that was a text from yesterday. So I say keep both of them and deactivate the rookie every week.
No, you're not using a roster spot on a second punter.
There's too many other valuable, especially if you're keeping three quarterbacks.
Exactly. There's zero chance on that one.
We'll see what happens today at Titans practice. They're in the middle of it right now against the Arizona Cardinals as well. We'll be back tomorrow here on Robbie and Rex Road, 6 a.m. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace coming up next. This is 102.5, 106.3, The Game.